Chapter 23. Cole. Grangerford was a gentleman, you see. He was a gentleman all over, and so was his family. He was well born, as the saying is, and that's worth as much in a man as it is in a horse, so the widow Douglas said, and nobody ever denied that she was of the first aristocracy in our town. And Pappy always said it too, though he warn't no more quality than a mudcat himself. Colonel Grangerford was very tall and very slim, and had a darkish poly complexion, not a sign of red in it anywheres. He was clean-shaved every morning all over his thin face, and he had the thinnest kind of lips, and the thinnest kind of nostrils, and a high nose, and heavy eyebrows, and the blackest kind of eyes, sunk so deep back that they seemed like they was looking out of caverns at you, as you may say. His forehead was high, and his hair was black and straight, and hung to his shoulders. His hands was long and thin, and every day of his life he put on a clean shirt, and a full suit from head to foot made out of linen so white it hurt your eyes to look at it. And on Sundays he wore a blue tail coat with brass buttons on it. He carried a mahogany cane with a silver head to it. There weren't no frivolishness about him, not a bit, and he weren't ever loud. He was as kind as he could be, you could feel that, you know, and so you had confidence. Sometimes he smiled, and it was good to see, but when he straightened himself up like a liberty pole, and the lightning begun to flicker out from under his eyebrows, you wanted to climb a tree first, and find out what the matter was afterwards. He didn't ever have to tell anybody to mind their manners, everybody was always good-mannered where he was. Everybody loved to have him around too. He was sunshine most always, I mean he made it seem like good weather. When he turned into a cloud bank it was awful dark for half a minute, and that was enough. There wouldn't nothing go wrong again for a week. When him and the old lady come down in the morning all the family got up out of their chairs, and give them good day, and didn't set down again till they had set down. Then Tom and Bob went to the sideboard where the decanter was, and mixed a glass of bitters, and handed it to him, and he held it in his hand, and waited till Tom's and Bob's was mixed, and then they bowed and said, "Our duty to you, sir, and madam," and they bowed the least bit in the world and said thank you, and so they drank, all three, and Bob and Tom poured a spoonful of water on the sugar, and the mite of whiskey or apple brandy in the bottom of their tumblers, and give it to me and Buck, and we drank to the old people too. Bob was the oldest, and Tom next, tall, beautiful men with very broad shoulders and brown faces, and long black hair and black eyes. They dressed in white linen from head to foot, like the old gentleman, and wore broad Panama hats. Then there was Miss Charlotte. She was 25, and tall and proud and grand, but as good as she could be when she weren't stirred up. But when she was as he had a look that would make you wilt in your tracks, like her father. She was beautiful. So was her sister, Miss Sophia, but it was a different kind. She was gentle, and sweet like a dove, and she was only 20. Each person had their own nigger to wait on them, Buck too. My nigger had a monstrous easy time, because I weren't used to having anybody do anything for me, but Buck's was on the jump most of the time. This was all there was of the family now, but there used to be more, three sons. They got killed, and Emline that died. The old gentleman owned a lot of farms, and over 100 niggers. Sometimes a stack of people would come there, horseback, from 10 or 15 mile around, and stay 5 or 6 days, and have such junketings round about and on the river, and dances and picnics in the woods daytimes, and balls at the house nights. These people was mostly kinfolks of the family. The men brought their guns with them. It was a handsome lot of quality, I tell you. There was another clan of aristocracy around there, 5 or 6 families, mostly of the name of Shepherdson. They was as high-toned, and well-born and rich and grand as the tribe of Grangerfords. The Shepherdsons and Grangerfords used the same steamboat landing, which was about 2 mile above our house, So sometimes when I went up there with a lot of our folks, I used to see a lot of the Shepherdsons there on their fine horses. One day Buck and me was away out in the woods hunting, and heard a horse coming. We was crossing the road. Buck says, "Quick! Jump for the woods!" We done it, and then peeped down the woods through the leaves. Pretty soon a splendid young man come galloping down the road, setting his horse easy and looking like a soldier. He had his gun across his pommel. I had seen him before. It was young Arnie Shepherdson. I heard Buck's gun go off at my ear, and Arnie's hat tumbled off from his head. He grabbed his gun and rode straight to the place where we was hid. But we didn't wait. We started through the woods on a run. The woods weren't thick, so I looked over my shoulder to dodge the bullet, and twice I seen Arnie cover Buck with his gun. And then he rode away the way he come to get his hat, I reckon, but I couldn't see. We never stopped running till we got home. The old gentleman's eyes blazed a minute, 'twas pleasure, mainly, I judged, then his face sort of smoothed down, and he says, kind of gentle, "I don't like that shooting from behind a bush. Why didn't you step into the road, my boy?" "The Shepherdsons don't, father. They always take advantage." Miss Charlotte, she held her head up like a queen, while Buck was telling his tale, and her nostrils spread and her eyes snapped. The two young men looked dark, but never said nothing. Miss Sophia, she turned pale, but the color come back, when she found the man weren't hurt. Soon as I could get Buck down by the corn cribs under the trees by ourselves, I says, "Did you want to kill him, Buck?" "Well, I bet I did." "What did he do to you?"
"Him?
He never done nothing to me."
"Well then, what did you want to kill him for?"
"Why, nothing, only it's on account of the feud."
"What's a feud?"
"Why, where was he raised?"
"Don't you know what a feud is?"
"Never heard of it before, tell me about it."
"Well," says Buck, "a feud is this way. A man has a quarrel with another man, and kills him, then that other man's brother kills him. Then the other brothers, on both sides, goes for one another, then the cousins chip in, and by everybody's killed off, and there ain't no more feud. But it's kind of slow, and takes a long time."
"Has this one been going on long, Buck?"
"Well, I should reckon. It started 30 years ago, or somers along there. There was trouble about something, and then a lawsuit to settle it. And the suit went agin one of the men, and so he up and shot the man that won the suit, which he would naturally do, of course. Anybody would."
"What was the trouble about, Buck?"
"Land?"
"I reckon maybe, I don't know."
"Well, who done the shooting?
Was it a Grangerford or a Shepherdson?"
"Laws, how do I know? It was so long ago."
"Don't anybody know?"
"Oh, yes. Pa knows, I reckon, and some of the other old people, but they don't know now what the row was about in the first place."
"Has there been many killed, Buck?"
"Yes, right smart chance of funerals. But they don't always kill. Pa's got a few buckshot in him, but he don't mind it 'cause he don't weigh much, anyway. Bob's been carved up some with a bowie, and Tom's been hurt once or twice."
"Has anybody been killed this year, Buck?"
"Yes, we got one, and they got one. 3 months ago my cousin Bud, 14-year-old, was riding through the woods on t'other side of the river, and didn't have no weapon with him, which was blame foolishness, and in a lonesome place he hears a horse a-coming behind him, and sees old Baldy Shepherdson a-linking after him with his gun in his hand, and his white hair flying in the wind. And instead of jumping off and taking to the brush, Bud Lodi could outrun him, so they had it, nip and tuck, for 5 mile or more, the old man a-gaining all the time. So at last Bud seen it weren't any use, so he stopped and faced around so as to have the bullet holes in front, you know, and the old man he rode up, and shot him down. But he didn't get much chance to enjoy his luck, for inside of a week our folks laid him out. I reckon that old man was a coward, Buck. I reckon he weren't a coward.
Not by a blame sight. There ain't a coward amongst them Shepherdsons, not a one.
and there ain't no cowards amongst the Grangerfords either. Why, that old man kept up his end in a fight one day for half an hour against three Grangerfords, and come out winner. They was all a horseback. He lit off of his horse, and got behind a little woodpile, and kept his horse before him to stop the bullets. But the Grangerfords stayed on their horses, and capered around the old man, and peppered away at him, and he peppered away at them. Him and his horse both went home pretty leaky and crippled, but the Grangerfords had to be fetched home, and one of them was dead, and another died the next day. No, sir. If a body's out hunting for cowards, he don't want to fool away any time amongst them Shepherdsons, because they don't breed any of that kind. Next Sunday we all went to church, about 3 mile, everybody a horseback. The men took their guns along, so did Buck, and kept them between their knees, or stood them handy against the wall. The Shepherdsons done the same. It was pretty ornery preaching all about brotherly love, and such like tiresomeness. But everybody said it was a good sermon, and they all talked it over going home, and had such a powerful lot to say about faith, and good works and free grace and prefer your destination, and I don't know what all, that it did seem to me to be one of the roughest Sundays I had run across yet. About an hour after dinner everybody was dozing around, some in their chairs and some in their rooms, and it got to be pretty dull. Buck and the dog was stretched out on the grass in the sun sound asleep. I went up to our room, and judged I would take a nap myself. I found that sweet Miss Sophia standing in her door, which was next to ours, and she took me in her room, and shut the door very soft, and asked me if I liked her, and I said I did. And she asked me if I would do something for her, and not tell anybody, and I said I would. Then she said she'd forgot her testament, and left it in the seat of church between two other books, and would I slip out quiet, and go there, and fetch it to her, and not say nothing to nobody. I said I would. So I slid out and slipped off up the road, and there weren't anybody at the church, except maybe a hog or two, for there weren't any lock on the door, and hogs likes a punchy in floor in summer dash time because it's cool. If you notice, most folks don't go to church, only when they've got to, but a hog is different. Says I to myself, something's up. It ain't natural for a girl to be in such a sweat about a testament. So I give it a shake, and out drops a little piece of paper with Elf Past 2 wrote on it with a pencil. I ransacked it, but couldn't find anything else. I couldn't make anything out of that, so I put the paper in the book again, and when I got home, and upstairs there was Miss Sophia in her door waiting for me. She pulled me in, and shut the door. Then she looked in the testament till she found the paper, and as soon as she read it she looked glad. And before a body could think she grabbed me, and give me a squeeze, and said I was the best boy in the world, and not to tell anybody. She was mighty red in the face for a minute, and her eyes lighted up, and it made her powerful pretty. I was a good deal astonished, but when I got my breath I asked her what the paper was about, and she asked me if I had read it, and I said no, and she asked me if I could read writing, and I told her oh, only coarse hand, and then she said the paper weren't anything but a bookmark to keep her place, and I might go and play now. I went off down to the river, studying over this thing, and pretty soon I noticed that my nigger was following along behind. When we was out of sight of the house he looked back, and around a second, and then comes a dash running, and says, "Mars George, if you'll come down into the swamp I'll show you a whole stack o' water moccasins." Thinks I, that's mighty curious. He said that yesterday. He oughter know a body don't love water moccasins enough to go around hunting for them. What is he up to, anyway? So I says, "All right, trot ahead." I followed a half a mile, then he struck out over the swamp, and waded ankle deep as much as another half mile. We come to a little flat piece of land which was dry, and very thick with trees and bushes and vines, and he says, "You shove right in dot just a few steps, Mars George. Dot's what day is." I see them before. I don't care to see them no more. Then he slopped right along and went away, and pretty soon the trees hid him. I poked into the place a ways, and come to a little open patch as big as a bedroom all hung around with vines, and found a man laying there asleep, and, by jings, it was my old Jim. I waked him up, and I reckoned it was going to be a grand surprise to him to see me again, but it weren't. He nearly cried he was so glad, but he weren't surprised. Said he swum along behind me that night, and heard me yell every time, but that's an answer, because he didn't want nobody to pick him up, and take him into slavery again. Says he, I got hurt a little, and couldn't swim fast, so I was a considerable ways betting you towards the losses. When you landed I reckoned I could catch up with you on the land out having to shout at you, but when I see that house I begin to go slow. I was off to fur to hear what they say to you. I was afraid o' the dogs, but when it was all quiet a gin I knowed you's in the house, so I struck out for the woods to wait for day. Early in the morning some o' the niggers come along, gwine to the fields, and they took me and showed me this place. What the dogs can't track me on account so the water, and they brings me truck to eat every night, and tells me how you's a gettin' along. Why didn't you tell my Jack to fetch me here sooner, Jim? Well, 'twarn't no use to disturb you, Huck, tell we could do something, but we's all right now. I been a-buying pots and pans and victuals, as I got a chance, and a-patching up the raft nights when, what raft, Jim? Our ole raft. You mean to say our old raft weren't smashed all to flinders? No, she weren't. She was tore up a good deal one end of her was. But they weren't no great harm done, on your traps was mo's all losses. If we hadn't dived so deep and swum so fur underwater, and the night hadn't been so dark, and we weren't so scared, and been sich punkin heads, as the saying is, we'd a seed the raft. But it's just as well we didn't, case now she's all fixed up a gin mo's as good as new, and we's got a new lot o' stuff, in the place o' what us losses. Why, how did you get hold of the raft again, Jim? Did you catch her? How I gwine to catch her and I out in the woods? No, some o' the niggers. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.